May it please the court, Joseph Luby re-arguing on behalf of the appellants John C. Middleton et al. The issue today is whether the respondents must abide by the APA when they create public policy by declaring how it is the state of Missouri will carry out the ultimate punishment in the people's name. Stepping back, Your Honors, the entire purpose of the APA is to ensure that our laws and policies are the product of democratic processes, well, democratic with a small d. Democracy means that if the government does something I don't like, I can go out and mobilize my fellow citizens, and as the old saying goes, if we want, we can vote the bums out, or we can at least try. Now, that isn't true when the state acts through unelected bureaucrats. And our system lets agencies go ahead and make law and policy within the interstices of statutory language, but there's a catch, and it's an important catch. The catch is that the bureaucrats have to first hear from the public before they make policy for the public, and so they have to provide notice of what it is they're proposing.
The statute authorizes injection as the method of execution.
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question, please?
The statute authorizes execution by lethal injection.
Yes, the statute.
It's the only method.
Actually, Your Honor, the statute specifies that executions can proceed by either lethal injection or lethal gas. That's 546.720.
Right.
And that is one sense in which this particular agency has made law. And when an agency
You mean when they chose one over the other?
Correct. Okay. Not only did they choose one or the other, they then chose a particular method of carrying out the lethal injection that's been a matter of great factual, legal,
and medical
controversy.
If the inmate wants to have gas instead of lethal injection, is that his prerogative or is that not an option for him?
That would certainly be his prerogative under the statute, and I certainly know no external constitutional restraints upon that. There are obviously many ways, I would think, of administering lethal gas if that's what the DOC would decide to do.
Then wouldn't it be up to the department to choose which what kind of gas to use?
Yes, it would be up to the department, but not solely up to the department. Because in crafting an execution protocol, the DOC necessarily is making policy and deciding how all executions will carry forth. That is a general statement. That is a statement of general applicability, under the APA that implements and interprets law and policy. And it doesn't fall under any of the exceptions to the APA, as we've discussed in the briefing. So yes, that's a decision that is made by the director, but that doesn't mean that it's a decision that is left solely to the director.
So if a prisoner wanted to have lethal injection, the state would have to publish, in your view, a notice and comment as to the actual agents that were going to be used in the suffocation death of the prisoner?
Yes, I believe it would. I believe that the courts that have held that lethal injection protocols are subject to the Administrative Procedure Act would agree with that.
How would you respond to this part of the statute? It's 546.7202 that says that the section of the execution protocol that directly relates to the administration of lethal gas or lethal chemicals is open record. The remainder of the execution protocol of the Department of Corrections is a closed record. Doesn't that statute suggest that it wouldn't be subject to notice and comment because the legislature specifically said it would be a closed record?
Well, what is a closed record? What we are arguing about is itself an open record, and that is the particular procedures and means by which lethal injection is carried out. That is an open record under the statute. There's certainly nothing inconsistent between that being an open record on the one hand and being promulgated through the APA. And in fact, Your Honor, I think the statute cuts the other way in the sense that at least as to part of the protocol, the legislature has exempted the DOC from an otherwise generally applicable statute, that is the Sunshine Act. And has designated that part of the protocol will be a closed record. Well, in specifically designating that part of the Sunshine Act doesn't apply, maybe that sheds light on the legislature's silence on the Administrative Procedure Act, at least if you accept the math from that expressio unius est exclusio alteris. And of course, there is then also the general presumption entirely outside of that statute that states that the DOC and every other state agency must formally promulgate a rule through notice and comment rulemaking when creating a statement that falls under the APA's definition of a rule. That's section 217.040.
This statute would be more specific than the general statute concerning promulgating rules. Would you concede that?
Yes and no, Your Honor. This statute is more specific in terms, in the sense that it specifically deals with lethal injection. But it's not more specific in terms of what it says about rulemaking, because it doesn't say anything about rulemaking.
How could the Department of Corrections promulgate rules for the protocols for lethal injection and have part of the protocol be closed and part of the protocol be open?
The only part of the protocol that needs to be open is the part that relates directly to the preparation and injection of chemicals, or to the preparation and administration of gas. That is what the statute says.
And does it say preparation?
Administration. Yes. So the part of the protocol that relates directly to the administration of the lethal agents, that is an open record. And there I can't conceive of anything that would prevent the Department of Corrections from promulgating such a proposal as a rule, including the protocol that they have settled on.
So you think the protocol can be portions of it not promulgated and portions of it promulgated?
We are only talking about the portion that relates directly to the lethal, to the injection of lethal chemicals or the administration of lethal gas. That is, we're only talking about that portion in which the in which a state agency has created law and has created policy by choosing the state's method of execution. The other portions of the protocol wouldn't even fall under the definition of a rule. For example, the identities of the executioners wouldn't be something that would be that an agency would need to promulgate nor usually disclose. That is another portion of their protocol. The respondents do say in their brief that part of the protocol that is not an open record relates to some security measures. And again, it's difficult for me to conceive how those would fall under the APA's definition of a rule, and how security measures that surround an execution are themselves an act of policy making, in the same way that the DOC makes policy when they say we're going to use lethal injection, and not only that, we're going to use this three-drug cocktail that's been criticized by the medical community.
You're only saying that they need to publish as a rule the part that's subject to the open records law, and the part that is part of their statement of general applicability as to how executions in Missouri will be carried out. And you're not suggesting particular decisions as to this execution need to be adopted as some sort of rule, but simply their general standards.
Yes, absolutely.
And your suggestion is that the scope of what would be open is determined by the definition of the word administration. Well, that's the word used in the statute.
Under the statute, and the DOC's disclosure of this portion of the protocol is the DOC's attempt, as I see it, to obey at least that portion of the statute that requires this part of the protocol to be an open record.
So there's not really a question. They have to follow the part that says it's an open record. The question is it adopted by rule, or is it adopted as a matter of internal policy that doesn't have to be promulgated as a rule?
Right. That is why we're here.
So can you address that? They say that because you're only dealing with inmates by definition who are subject to the death penalty or in the institution, it's a matter simply dealing with internal policy and internal procedures and administration.
Right. And the reason for my entire opening civics lesson is simply that the need to keep agencies politically accountable and responsive is the reason why the exceptions that you mentioned are narrowly drawn and narrowly construed. Specifically, statements concerning only internal management, statements concerning only inmates.
It's also interesting that the world of under cruel and unusual punishment is an ever-evolving area. So the public has an interest in knowing what's going on. For example, we used to have hangings, and Gilmore was a firing squad, and it evolved to this point of injections and lethal injection, and also unusual, the Atkins case in 1989, you could execute mentally retarded people, but in 2003, because it became less usual, became more unusual to execute mentally retarded people. The Supreme Court said, well, now we don't execute mentally retarded people. It's an evolving area, and for the public to know what's involved here, and for scientists to look at it and see whether or not, as you mentioned, the Lancet medical journal saying this was a cruel use of chemicals, it's important for the public to know what's
going on. That is the precise argument that's made by the court, and I think persuasively in the Evans decision in Maryland. The court said that the internal management, that a statement of internal management must face inwards. Just as Bonfield, the author of this model legislation, says that a statement of internal management is addressed only to people inside the agency and not to people outside the agency, and is of interest only to people who are employed by the agency. So and that isn't the case here,
the real crux of this case is, what does the word only mean?
Concerning only, yes.
Yeah, definition of rule says, a statement concerning, this is an exception, only the internal management of the agency.
Correct.
And a statement concerning only inmates of an institution under the control of the Department of Corrections.
Yes. And there are many reasons that we've briefed that neither of those exceptions apply, but the most straightforward one is this. Neither of those exceptions, nor the other ones cited by the state, apply when an agency's statement is directed to people outside the agency. That is the case with this protocol. Most of this protocol, most of its steps, are directed to and implemented by outside medical practitioners. Those individuals cannot be considered part of the agency for numerous reasons. The Missouri definition, the APA definition of a state agency, certainly doesn't cover contractors. There is a statute that requires employees of the DOC to remain completely distinct from contractors. The DOC's own practices, for example, when the DOC promulgated a rule through notice and comment rulemaking to set up a program to bring in outside employers to hire inmates as employees, well, those outside employers and contractors weren't considered part of the agency, and if they were, if it were simply a matter of internal management or an intra-agency memo, the DOC wouldn't have gone to all that trouble to promulgate a rule.
Can you give me an example of some activity that would concern only inmates? I mean, it seems like most every activity of prison life concerns people in addition to inmates,
right,
whether it be the food that the inmates are provided or transportation of inmates,
sure,
to a medical facility. Was this word only surplusage, or is there really meaning that should be given to it?
The word only cannot be surplusage. It has to mean something. At the same time, it would be meaningless if it meant anyone else. So concerning only inmates has to mean if the statement in question concerns some person beyond people that the inmates deal with every single day.
Well, give me an example of what concerning.
An example would be from the Arizona Court of Appeals in Wilkinson. A regulation governing when outside clergy can come in and visit. The court said, just look at the dictionary definition of concerning only. That doesn't concern only inmates. It concerns inmates and the clergy who would like to visit them. And so the statute doesn't apply. In this instance, the protocol does not concern only inmates because it gives all these directions to outside medical specialists.
Well,
it doesn't concern only
inmates. So what activity in prison life would concern only inmates? What did the legislature intend by using those words?
One example given by Professor Bonfield would be the setting of the inmate's daily routine, or the schedule for lunchtime, for example, would be a statement that would concern only inmates.
Whether they have macaroni and cheese or
That probably isn't a statement of general applicability, unless they have a rule that you always have to have mac and cheese.
Well, but the legislature, I mean, the presumption is if you adopt statements of general applicability, they're rules, and
right,
most of them may not be as of great public import or interest,
right,
as this one. But you have to, if they're going to be of general, if you're going to say you only feed inmates, for instance, only get water and bread, that would be perhaps a statement of general applicability, even dealing with food.
Yes, but it might consume only inmates,
right,
and you might have to attack it from some legal mechanism other than the APA, and I need to resolve it.
And I think there's one more question.
Oh.
Is there?
No.
Okay.
I'll reserve what very little remains of my time.
You still get your 3 minutes. It goes quickly, though.
May it please the court, I'm Mike Spillane. I represent the respondents, the Department of Correction in this case. What Mr. Middleton is asking for is a breathtaking expansion of the definition of rule as it now exists in Missouri under this court's case law and under actual practice, and a contraction of the exceptions. We're all familiar with the Bogus case, Missouri Soybean, Labundy, that teach that there has to be, before one even gets to the exceptions, there has to be a right that is impacted or potentially impacted.
But Missouri Soybean was dealing with something that had no impact. It was a preliminary determination, and that's why they said it didn't actually impact a right. Here, what the cocktail you give this person very much impacts people.
It impacts people.
It's very, very different than Missouri Soybean in those cases.
It has to impact a right. I mean, and before we even get to the exceptions, I don't think they don't have a right to determine the cocktail themselves. I mean, the only argument they have there are two arguments I think they would construct for a right, and both of them are circular. One of them is, well, we have a right to notice and comment. Well, you do if you have a right in the first place. The right to notice and comment doesn't create its own right to notice and comment. And the second argument I think that they would make would be, I have an Eighth Amendment right not to be subject to cruel and unusual punishment. Well, of course you do, but that's not what we're arguing about.
Well, I think their argument is that if the Department of Corrections has adopted a particular protocol or procedure or use of certain chemicals in order to effectuate the executions, and they apply that to all persons who are subject to execution in Missouri, that should be published as a rule so there's an opportunity for comment on whether that's an appropriate procedure, just like other things that are adopted generally are subject to comment. So these kind of issues that come up individually in cases can be addressed by the department more generally and coherently with evidence on both sides in reaching an appropriate protocol for the state of Missouri to use in its execution.
Well, I think that's the argument, but I think it's not consistent, in my opinion, with Labundy, Missouri Soybean, and Baugus, because as this court talked about, you not only have to have general applicability, but this court also read in a right has to be affected or potentially affected before we even get to the exceptions, and there has to be a real right. Some of those cases talk about you can't have a potential to affect a right that doesn't exist. Now, if their right that they're talking about is, well, I have an Eighth Amendment right not to be subject to cruel and unusual punishment, well, then everything in the prison would, by their argument, have to be a rule because... Go ahead, sir.
Let me take it to the actual statutory exception, a statement concerning only inmates of an institution. And this protocol, as I understand it, specifies the particular dosages and the either brand name or generic name of the drugs that are used.
Yes, sir, that is accurate.
So if the department were to put this out as a rule for comment and so forth, this might concern me if I were a maker of pharmaceuticals to say, well, I've got a better product.
Well, I think we're reading concerning has a different meaning than a person is concerned about it. I think it means the object of the rule. And I'd refer the court to the Tennessee case, Abdurrahman versus Bresidan. I think something I didn't make clear last time I was up here in oral argument was the Tennessee case also, the rule there, statute there also says concerning only inmates. And I'll read it if you like. It's 4.5-102.10a. Statements concerning only the internal management of state government and not affecting the private rights, privileges, or procedures available to the public. So certainly the Tennessee Supreme Court felt that concerning...
Well, actually, they conflated that definition from what is little k in 536 with little a in the same section, because it says a statement concerning only the internal management of an agency, which goes on to talk about the legal rights and procedures available to the public or any segment thereof.
Right. I mean,
but
the Tennessee.
But then the separate one doesn't say anything about legal rights.
I think that's right. That's the distinction on exception K. We're talking about internal management. The wording in the Tennessee exclusion, I think, is even narrower than the Missouri exclusion because it talks about concerning only and it talks about affecting rights, whereas the Missouri talks about concerning only and talks about substantially affecting rights. So I think the Tennessee concerning only is actually narrower than the Missouri exclusion.
Except that the statement concerning only inmates of an institution under the control of the DOC doesn't have anything about rights or anything in there unless I'm missing something.
Well, I think it also says... that it can't affect the substantial rights to remain within the exclusion.
No, that's up in A.
Well, that's what I was talking about, A.
Yeah.
I was talking about
those
mixing
are two
the two together.
Exceptions.
They're separate.
Yeah, I think we're talking about now. Missouri has A and K. And my argument are there are three independent exclusions which apply here. A, C, and K under the statute, and then a fourth one under 217.040.2, which was also relied on by the trial court, which says concerning only inmates and doesn't have any requirement to stay within the exclusion that the policy not have an effect on the public. So, I mean, that's the broadest exclusion. Go ahead, please.
Pardon me. Tennessee was not concerning only inmates. Tennessee was just concerning inmates.
Oh, no, ma'am. That's K, but I was talking about concerning internal management.
Right, but I was talking about K.
Right, K is relating to inmates, and Missouri is relating only to inmates.
Right.
But both A and K, both A in Missouri and the equivalent A in Tennessee say concerning only internal management,
right.
And the Tennessee court ruled based on two reasons.
How can you say
A
how
K.
the state executes someone concerns only the internal management of the department? It really has nothing to do with the management of the department. It has to do with how the state will execute persons in the state of Missouri, which concerns much more how than how you're managing the Department of Corrections.
Well, I could argue a little bit from the Virginia case that I cited.
Well, why don't you just argue, answer
okay,
that question?
Okay, well, the answer is this. What the Department of Corrections does is it carries out the sentences of inmates, whether it be life imprisonment or whether it be capital punishment. That is concerning only inmates. The object of the procedure is inmates. Now, because it's important, does it mean it's not internal management, and does it mean it doesn't concern only inmates? And if it's either one of those exceptions, then it's excluded from the rule. And if it's exception C, it's excluded from the rule, which is an interagency memorandum. Go ahead.
Wouldn't under your restricted definition, we'd have lots and lots of rules that really were inappropriately adopted because they dealt with only internal agency policy. If we were to accept your definition of what's only agency, only internal affairs and so forth of the agency, almost everything would be internal and nothing would be subject to rulemaking.
I disagree. I think my definition is very consistent with what's happening now. I think all the medical care now is handled by contractors internally. Certainly their doctors, although it's an internal and they're under contract, none of that is rulemaking. That's all SOPs. That would all change if this court were to change the law in this case. Many other things.
And what would be, we're trying to do what the legislature adopted and recognize certain exemptions. They adopted and apply the general rule that you generally have to make statements of general applicability subject to rulemaking. As we're attempting to effectuate that policy, tell me what policy is behind not making this subject to rulemaking. What policy the legislature would have been advancing in saying that they did not want input as to whether this is appropriate protocol or procedure?
In the case of DOC, it has to do with flexibility. And I think that's that is evident if one looks at 217.040 2 and 3, which are adopted long after the adoption of the APA. And those create broader exclusion for the Department of Corrections and its divisions than even exist in the rule. One can also look in the statutes and see how that is interpreted.
So the department needs flexibility as to what protocol it uses so it can change it around?
I think the Department of Corrections needs a great deal of flexibility, and I'm thinking...
No, but I'm talking about as to the execution protocol.
Okay, I was talking in general about Department of Corrections. The department hasn't made a specific legislative comment. I mean, there isn't a specific statute that says the execution protocol is excluded.
Could you focus your attention on 547.720.2? And because that specifically addresses the openness of the execution protocol and limits what is open, does that not supersede these general statutes?
Well, I think that deals with the open records law and the sunshine law and not the rulemaking law.
How can you have a rule promulgated that would be required to be open and have it be closed?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, that's why they're avoiding saying that the whole protocol has to be published, because it would be nonsensical. And the reason part of it is open, I think, if we go to practical matters, is it was developed during litigation to comply with court mandates, and you want the court to be able to look at it and see that you've done that. But that doesn't have anything to do with the policy considerations for publishing it as a rule. In fact, I would think it would cut against it, because there are other things one would think in the broader policy besides administering the chemicals that could have to do with the Eighth Amendment and so forth.
And those are, of course, closed. They specifically say they want all of the protocol not to be public, except for the administration of the lethal injection.
Exactly right. And I think the answer for that is, historically, as the court knows, there was never a general protocol that existed. The reason it exists is so that federal courts that are looking at Eighth Amendment issues can look at this and, as they have done, say this is fine. And that's why that part of it's open.
Practically speaking, can part of the protocol be promulgated by a rule practically and part of it not be?
I'm not an expert on that, but one would think there'd be difficulty with that. I'm not an expert on the procedure for promulgating rules, but that it seems odd. I agree with Your Honor on that. And it seems to me that but for the federal judicial mandates, which now exist in many cases, that there wouldn't necessarily be a general protocol. There wasn't in the past.
And do the federal judicial mandates give us direction as to what the word administer means? Administration means the scope of administration?
Not to my knowledge. Not to my knowledge. But I think administration is kind of a narrow concept, as the court does. And as you've seen, the protocol that's in the record, I believe it's page 143 to 146. It's not a long document. It is perhaps two or three pages out of a much larger document, which is a closed record.
I'd like to answer Judge Breckenridge's question in a slightly different manner. What is your understanding of the duty that last sentence in 546.722.2 means? The section of an execution protocol that directly relates to the administration of lethal gas or lethal chemicals is an open record. The remainder of any execution protocol of the Department of Records or Corrections is a closed record. What is the duty that puts upon the state, or what's your understanding of that?
I think open and closed record are a term of art, and I think we're referring to the Sunshine Law, if I'm not mistaken. And that would be my reading of it. I think they know what that means. And that the other can't be revealed, and it's controlled by the laws that talk about not revealing closed records. And the small part that deals with the administration of chemicals is controlled by the part that deals with open records.
Do I understand you then to say that it is regardless of whether this must be promulgated as a rule or not?
I think
it
that's
an
accurate.
Open record if it's an administration of lethal chemicals. It's not an open record otherwise.
I think that's right. But I think there's also the inference that if the vast majority of it's a closed record, the legislature never intended the protocol to be go through notice and comment as a rule, because it would be nonsensical. How could you have a closed record that no one can see be commented on as a rule? It seems to me to cut strongly against any of it being a rule, but that's my reading of it. It has to do with open and closed, not directly with rulemaking, which is controlled by 536. Yes, Your Honor.
If the legislature intended the protocol to be a rule, why would there be a need for a declaration in that statute to say that needs to be an open record? The administration of
I think that's a good point, Your Honor. I think that's exactly right. And I think another way of saying that is there are certain things that the Department of Corrections does that the legislature has specifically said in the statute should be published as rules, and that's not here. Off the top of my head, I can think of 558041, which is good time credit, and 217690, which has to do with parole. And in both those cases, the DOC said in this specific case, it will be a rule. And although it's not directly on point, that's something Florida has done. In a case, I didn't cite it in the brief, I just cited that it exists because I don't think it's on point, but the Florida statute specifically says the protocol will be promulgated as a rule.
Do you know when this part of the statute was amended, this particular sentence that we're referring to?
I'm sorry, which statute?
This last line in paragraph 2,
to make part of it open.
720.
It should be in the legislative history at the bottom of the page.
2007.
When does it say 2007? Yeah. That's consistent with my recollection. Are there any questions or concerns before I move on with the court? Let me talk a little bit about the case law in other states. We know there was a California case that was decided since the last oral argument, which is Morales. I think that case is not on point. And the reason I think that is because they didn't address any of the exceptions we're talking about here. In fact, California didn't raise the internal management exception until after they lost a trial, so they wouldn't hear it. It's just purely California-specific stuff. Could I finish here? I got a red light. Evans, real quickly,
I think we'll look at the record for the rest.
Oh, thank you,
counsel.
Okay.
Wow.
while we're talking about the California court in Morales, it leads to an important general point made by that court, which actually echoes a point made by Professor Bonfield in his treatise, and that is that any doubts surrounding the region applicability of the APA need to be resolved in favor of requiring notice and comment rulemaking. The reason for that is the policies behind the APA, not only the protection of our democratic values, but also the steps to ensure that agency proclamations are the result of rational consideration and full consideration of all of the relevant information brought to the agency by the interested public.
And a sense of transparency.
Yes.
Is it inconsistent with your argument that it's a rule, because it's a statement of general applicability, that Missouri statutes make part of it a closed record?
No. In fact, I think just the opposite. The Missouri statute, that is subsection 720, makes part of the protocol an open record. That's the part that we're addressing. And it is that part of the protocol in which the DOC is carrying out policy by choosing how it is that the state will execute inmates. It is that part of the protocol through which the DOC decides it'll be lethal injection, not lethal gas. Is that part of the protocol that says there will be a sequence of three chemicals, sodium pentothal, vandronium bromide, potassium chloride. That is the part of the protocol that the legislature said needs to be open. That is entirely consistent with the legislature saying that this ought to be promulgated as a rule. It certainly isn't so inconsistent that it cuts against other legislative declarations, specifically 217.040.1, requiring the DOC to engage in notice and comment rulemaking whenever it comes out with something that meets the definition of a rule. A word about the internal management exception. The Tennessee case really ought to be looked at skeptically, because all that case says is that this protocol falls squarely within the internal management exception. Nowhere does that court, and for that matter, nowhere does respondents' briefing, define what internal management means. The Maryland court, by contrast, emphasizes that something that is of internal management necessarily faces inward. We know from Bonfield and the other authorities we cite that something is not within internal management if it faces outward, or if it deals with issues that aren't solely of interest to the agency and its staff.
Nevertheless, the executions themselves take place within the institution.
Yes.
They don't take place in a public place or a public square or something like that.
That's correct, but they do involve not only the prisoner, but also the witnesses. The DOC under Section 546.740 is required. The director is specifically required to allow witnesses to participate. That is specifically witnesses named by the inmate, up to five relatives, up to two members of the clergy. And the director is also allowed to invite the participation of other reputable citizens. It's still very much a public act that this court itself participates in. And for that reason, it certainly isn't just a matter of agency housekeeping.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The case is submitted.